We're taking stock of the Tokyo Games on the morning show, focusing on men's competition this time. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. Some numbers here. The U.S. leads in the total medal count with 95. China has scooped up the most golds at the moment with 34. And in all, 339 medals will be awarded across 33 sports. What sport are you following in Tokyo? Are you watching male athletes on Team USA? What story inspires you? 800-642-1234. Philip Hirsch is back. He's covered 19 Olympics, former Olympic sports writer for the Chicago Tribune for more than 30 years. Phil, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. And, you know, before we dive into specific athletes and events, I want to get some of your broad stroke observations of the men's competition and the storylines you've been paying attention to with these athletes.
Well, obviously, it goes sport by sport. You've got the swimming, which has been over for almost a week. Caleb Dressel was the dominant male figure in the globally, as a lot expected, winning 5 gold medals, winning the and setting a couple of world records, winning the 3 of the shortest races, the 50, the 100, the 50 freestyle, 100 freestyle, and the 100 butterfly. In terms of other events, I mean, one of the big stories is the U.S. men's track and field team, and particularly the sprint track and field team, has had pretty much of a disastrous Olympics. They've so far, the entire medal count for track and field of the United States is only one gold medal by a man, and the rest have been by the great women athletes of this team. So we're down to basically the 5,000 meters is being run right now. And we're down then to the 4 relays, one of which the U.S. men didn't qualify for by botching a baton pass, which they seem to do with stunning regularity. Now, of course, we're left with the men's basketball final, which is going to be the United States against France late tonight. There are a number of other U.S. teams still alive for gold medals. I believe that all the other 4 are women. It's women's water polo, women's volleyball, women's basketball. Oh, no, I'm sorry, men's baseball. The U.S. men's baseball team is still in the running. They're playing in the final this, I think, Saturday afternoon.
Well, circling back to track, with Wisconsin representing on the track, Kenny Bendarek from Rice Lake, Wisconsin, he broke some records in the National Junior College Association Championships leading up to the games. Has he been overlooked? What stands out to you in his first Olympics?
He had a great, great, great performance. Everybody was presuming that his teammate, Noah Lyles, would win the gold medal in that event. And in that case, the attention often is on the person who doesn't live up to expectations compared to the person who exceeded expectations. Kenny had a phenomenal performance, and he can be, go forward with a tremendous amount of confidence.
Yeah, yeah. So do you expect him to improve over the years and remain at the top of runners? What might happen there?
I would say that he's got a great chance to become one of the top runners in the country He is already now one of the top runners in the country. I think he's got a great chance to remain one of the top runners in the country for at least the next, the next Olympics jumps up at us because of the postponement of the Tokyo Games. So it's only 3 more years. I think you're going to see a lot more of Kenny. I mean, he had a terrific, terrific performance in the 200-meter final.
Well, you're talking also about some of the low points in track. And Clayton Murphy there, the Olympics came to an end for him, and not in the way he hoped. He lacked that signature closing kick, finished last in that 800-meter final. What went on?
He just had one of those bad days. It happens to a lot of great runners. If you look at Emma Coburn in the women's steeplechase, the same, who's been a world medalist, Olympic medalist, she just had one of those with the French call a day went without a day. And that's, those kind of things can happen. And that's what happened to Clayton.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Phil Hirsch, a former reporter for the Chicago Tribune, has covered the Olympics for more than 3 decades. You can join in. Have been watching the men's competition this year in the Olympics. What's been your favorite events? What stands out to you? 800-642-1234. Phil, on the reverse side there, U.S. shot putter Ryan Crouser has had a really an amazing Olympics. What stood out to you with this athlete?
Well, actually, I also want to go back and give a shout out to Bobby Fink, who was the surprise winner of the men's 800 and men's 1500 meter swimming races with this unbelievable finish. I don't think people knew he was a contender. I don't think even he expected that he was going to win both of those races. Ryan Crouser's performance in the shot put was jaw dropping. He had set a world record, even though we knew how good he was. He had set a world record at the U.S. Olympic trials about 5 weeks ago. But all five of his six throws broke his own old Olympic record. And he came very close to breaking the world record again. And the most remarkable thing, not only were all those throws long, but he got through the event without a foul, and that's rare in shot put. But he has the ability to be incredibly consistent. One of the things, he's also a very smart shot putter. He knew that it was hot, it was humid, even with all the chalk that they use, the ball gets slippery, your hand gets slippery, and gets more slippery as time goes on. So he knew that it was a great idea. Normally he's a shot putter who builds over the six throws, who builds to his best throw. He knew it was really important to get a big throw out there on the first throw, and he did that. And then eventually on a sixth throw with the gold medal assured, that's when he had his longest throw, but he had already won the event on his first throw.
I was really moved by his story in dedicating his gold to his grandpa Larry, who had introduced him to the shot put. And it was sad to hear that, you know, his grandfather died the day he left for Tokyo.
Yeah, it was a beautiful story, particularly the anecdote about him throwing the shot in his grandpa's backyard.
Yeah.
And eventually there was concrete, there was grass, and there was sand, and eventually he was able to throw the shot far enough to get it out on the sand.
And through the garden shed.
One day he threw it so far it went through the garden shed. Also you have to realize it's hard even to conceive of, that's a 16-pound ball, and you're throwing it 75 feet. That's basically you're throwing it the length of a basketball court.
Mm.
So next time you're at the end of a basketball court, take a look at that. Imagine throwing and put something that weighs 16 pounds, maybe a bowling ball or something, although they're not that heavy, in your hand, and try to conceive of throwing it 75 feet.
Ryan Crouser has a teammate who has also been, you know, his biggest rival, Joe Kovacs. What do you see out of American athletes like that who have these in-team rivalries?
Well, I mean, the athletes like this always say that, you know, Sydney McLaughlin said it about her competition with Dalila Muhammad, that iron makes iron sharper. Iron sharpens iron. So I think that you've seen the same thing with Kovacs and Crouser. They've pushed each other to get better and better and better. And the fact that they're U.S. teammates and that they get along makes it even better. These are rivalries that, you know, we often think of rivalries as including animosity. This one clearly doesn't. Muhammad and McLaughlin clearly doesn't in the 400 hurdles. If you have someone to push you, I mean, the young woman who beat Katie Ledecky in the 400 meters in their opening race at the Olympics, Arianna Titmus, said, mm-hmm. Katie gave me something to shoot for.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the U.S. men's basketball team. Once the pros went to the Olympics with the Dream Team in 1992, the rest of the world suddenly saw what the level was that they could aspire to. And if you look at the number of global players in the NBA now, that's had a dramatic impact on international basketball.
Hmm. Phil Hirsch covered the Olympics for decades as a former sports reporter for the Chicago Tribune. We're looking at the men's competition today. Yesterday, we made space to focus on women athletes. What do you think of the most decorated male swimmer for Team USA in these games, Caleb Dressel, picking up five more gold medals in Tokyo? Did you watch swimming or diving? What do you think of Team USA men's basketball going from cold to hot? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the men's competition at the Summer Games on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in the home stretch, and here come the Beijing Winter Olympics set for February. The Olympic Committee told NPR that Chinese officials are attending the Games in part to monitor the effectiveness of COVID safety protocols. What do you think about these games going on in a pandemic and Japan's rising case counts? Do you think the Olympics have too many or not too or not enough sports? What moments do you remember? Join in 800-642-1234. Journalist Phil Hirsch has covered 19 of them, and he's with us for about 9 more minutes. I want to talk about anti-doping. You know, some Olympic viewers may be confused about the athletes competing this year under the acronym ROC, the Russian Olympic Committee. Can you explain that?
Well, going back to the big doping scandal at the 2014 Olympics, when it was found that Russia had developed this very intricate plan to substitute clean samples for presumed dirty samples, in other words, samples, urine samples that would have had performance-enhancing drugs in them. There's been more and more investigation of Russia, and it turned out that there was, in fact, a state-run or at least a sport-run doping scheme, centralized doping scheme in many, many sports. So over the course of time, there's been attempts to sanction the Russians for this, and actually at the previous Olympics in Rio, in track and field, there were very, very few Russians allowed to compete. You know, the problem, it's wound up being the International Olympic Committee. Putin was too important. They just basically kowtowed to Russia on this one, and they didn't sanction them seriously enough. Or else you could look at it from the other angle, which is that there obviously are clean Russian athletes, and if you ban the entire Olympic Committee, you're banning everybody for the misdeeds of some. So I mean, you can look at that, and that's the legal position that the International Olympic Committee has taken on this. The other issue that's gone on with this Olympics, normally there's a fair amount of out of competition testing that goes on, and because you almost never catch anybody with a test at competition. People know they're coming; they can clear the drugs from their system or take drugs that will clear from the system. Because of COVID, the amount of out-of-competition testing was clearly reduced. So that's what's created some doubt about some of the performances. And it's, you know, but I think it's certainly the Russians now have a nasty recent history, and that's why they are the target of all of these suspicions and doubts. But it's unfair to say that, you know, they're the only ones doping if they are doping, because what we have learned over the years about doping, you know, in cases like Lance Armstrong and Marion Jones, is that it has been traditionally relatively easy to beat doping controls by managing the timing of the doping, by using drugs that still haven't been detectable. So I'm just saying that before you throw blanket accusations at the Russian athletes, particularly who have been competing in Tokyo, yeah, you better make sure that the glass walls in your own house are pretty resilient to stones.
I was wondering just about that, whether the strict and rigid testing that has gone on in the past has not been overshadowed a bit by managing COVID protocols in the pandemic.
It clearly has been. There was a lot of fear that there would be no testing. There has been some testing, but not as much testing as there otherwise would have been.
Well, let's talk basketball for a moment. As you know, we're home to the new NBA champion Milwaukee Bucks, so basketball is just really top of mind here. But the U.S. men's basketball team, it's had just kind of a touch-and-go start here, some cold, some hot. What's going on with the basketball team?
Well, you know, these are great players and even great players, you put out the Dream Team, which was the greatest assemblage of players ever. I mean, they were just so good that they overpowered everybody. They didn't need much time to play together. But what you've got now is a leveling of basketball in the world. You've got some really other good teams, and that's what, you know, Spain has been terrific for years. Serbia has had a good team. France, who the U.S. plays in the final, has gotten better and better. They have, I think, 3 NBA players in the starting lineup. So I think that part of the thing is that there's an assumption that the United States is going to crush everybody, and without paying attention to how much the sport has progressed globally. And that's, as I said earlier, that's largely because of the influence of the Dream Team.
So what do you expect out of this rematch, France and the U.S.?
I expect the United States, they are getting better and better. Kevin Durant has been having a fabulous second half of the Olympics. I think that they will win this gold medal, but I wouldn't be surprised I would not be surprised if the game comes down to the final 2 or 3 minutes.
Circling back to swimming for a moment with Caleb Dressel and, you know, those 5 gold medals, 2 world records, 2 more Olympic records, do you think that Caleb's earned a seat next to superstars like Michael Phelps and Mark Spitz.
He's next to Michael Phelps is so far ahead of everybody else, particularly because please don't take this as taking anything away from Caleb, but Caleb swam relatively short distances. Michael Phelps was swimming the 400 individual medley, the 200 butterfly. And if you think of Katie Ledecky, who swam 6,200 meters of heats and finals, that's a lot harder. Caleb, I think, Michael Phelps is really up there in all Olympic sports in terms of medal count in a league by himself. So, and Spitz, of course, Spitz didn't compete in as many Olympics as Michael Phelps. Most athletes didn't back then because there wasn't enough ways to make money to keep yourself up. If you wanted to move forward and have a life and have a family, there wasn't a way to make enough money to live on.
Mm. Phil Hirsch with us, former reporter for the Chicago Tribune, covered the Olympics for decades. And taking your questions about the Olympics and the events, 800-642-1234. So we saw new sports at these games, karate, skateboarding, sport climbing, surfing. Do they have staying power?
Well, the International Olympic Committee has seen its audience, which is my demographic, which is old, get older and older and older. So they're trying to get younger people involved. This was the snowboarding in the Winter Olympics was one of the sports that was introduced that way. Skateboarding, the same thing. The question is, I think that younger people are probably consuming some of this, but in highlights on their phones. Whether they're watching a whole competition, I don't know, and whether it has staying power, I don't know, and whether the still primary audience for the Olympics, which is people in an older demographic, is paying any attention to skateboarding or sport climbing or surfing. It's impossible to tell that in the long run now. I think, they're obviously going to be back in the Olympics. They're also adding breakdancing in Paris. And this is, but as long as you keep sports that are old and antiquated, like modern pentathlon and some other stuff, I'm not sure that they've gotten the balance that they really want.
Well, here's a question for my 7-year-old last night, sitting on the couch watching, the 14-year-old make flawless dives. How young can you be to go to the Olympics, Mom?
That depends sport by sport. And normally, actually in the case of that young woman who I watched and was just my jaw was dropped too, she would not even have been eligible for the Olympics if they had occurred last year. The minimum age in diving was 14, and she was not 14 last year. So, yeah, it depends. It varies sport by sport. In many sports, it's 16, 17, or 18, but it's obviously it was a 12-year-old skateboarder.
Mm-hmm.
So each individual international sport federation determines the minimum age requirements. And so she was fortunate enough that one year later she was able to show the world how brilliant she was. There was another great Chinese diver who was referred to last night, Fu Ming Sha, who was also 14 when she won her first Olympic gold medals. And I know Cynthia Potter last night on the NBC telecast was saying that last night's winner was better than Fu Ming Sha. And it was hard to you watched her, the water barely moved when she cut through it on her entries. It was very impressive, and that's how it works in terms of ages. It varies federation by federation.
Okay, so I feel like I'm in a time warp here. Why do all the graphics and the images say Tokyo 2020?
Well, I think two reasons. One is financial. There would have been a lot of money spent to replace those, all of the branding, all of the logos, all of the signage, all of the everything. And so they just, I think that was the primary reason. They just decided to stick with the previous branding. And so that it is kind of confusing, I agree. But that's the reason why.
So if the stars align, we'll talk with you in February. Is Beijing ready for this? Less than 6 months to the Winter Games.
Beijing logistically is absolutely ready. Whether Beijing is ready for what is going to be a political firestorm about its treatment of the Uyghur minority in northwest China is another matter.
Mm. So what about the pandemic? Do you think that these protocols that we're seeing here in Tokyo will continue into the Winter Olympics?
Right now, when you see the news coming out of China about outbreaks in several places, including Wuhan, I wouldn't be surprised if it was another spectatorless Olympics.
Mm. Well, Phil, thank you so much for dodging and weaving with us so that you could see what you need to see and also talk with us. We appreciate it.
Well, have a great weekend. It's been my pleasure being your guest.
Phil Hirsch, a former reporter for the Chicago Tribune who covered the Olympics for more than 30 years. We talked with him yesterday about women athletes at the Games. Ahead this hour, how schools and families are preparing for the new school year. We check in with WPR's education reporter about vaccination uptake among students, what information and misinformation students are sharing, and how parents are processing all of it. News update is next here on the Ideas Network. We'll be right back.